This week, we bring you a most unusual story that makes use of the fourth dimension, time. Because of the unusual nature of the story, the principal role is a most difficult one, but we have great confidence in the fine star who's playing the part. He's been a favorite of movie audiences ever since the talkies came in. His list of picture credits is almost unbelievable, but I'll mention just a few. God's Country and the Woman, Till We Meet Again, Dark Victory, The Affairs of Susan, Experiment Perilous, and Jezebel. It's really an honor to welcome one of America's best-known actors, Mr. George Brent.
Thank you very much, Les. That was a lovely introduction. Now, would you mind giving me three or four copies to paste in my scrapbook?
Well, perhaps, George, in exchange for an autographed picture.
Certainly, Les. It just happens that I have about 20 or 30 in my pocket. Huh. But maybe it would be wise to wait until I've tried to merit that build-up with my performance here.
It's a deal, George. But have that picture ready, for we have a date right here at the microphone after the final curtain.
Right you are. I'll be here.
Thanks very much, George. And now, here is our announcer. The curtain is up, and here is the play.
I was once again in the room where I'd spent so many hours working. Everything looked exactly the same. It might have been yesterday that I left it all. And yet, so much had happened in the interval. So much. I sat down, took the cover off the typewriter, and inserted a clean white sheet of paper. Chapter 21. The small round key stared back at me as if in a challenge.
Some hot cocoa, dear?
Thanks, Lauren. I've picked myself a model wife, I can see that.
Oh, don't be too sure about who picked whom. You won't try to do too much for the first time, will you?
If I can do anything. It's tough going back after 6 months.
Oh, it'll come. Just be patient. And remember, not too much tonight.
I'll take it easy.
All right, dear.
I sat back and watched the steam curling up from the cup. That cup of cocoa, refreshing, strengthening, fragrant. It was a symbol of her meaning to me. I lifted the cup, and my thoughts drifted back to that other night, 6 months before. It was June, and I was still living alone in my apartment in McDougal Alley. During the day, I slept, ate, and saw my friends. Lauren, whose apartment was right over mine, in particular. At night, I worked. My book, a novel of the period directly after the Civil War, was progressing well. A few more weeks and it would be ready for its first trip to a publisher. On that never-to-be-forgotten night, I was feeling none too well. Probably another of my attacks coming on. Attacks of the malaria I picked up in the Pacific. So I hurried. I wanted to finish the 20th chapter before the fever took hold. When the last word was on the page, I got up, swallowed a couple of quinidrine tablets, and threw my coat over my shoulders and walked out. Ah, the night air was cool and fresh after the rain. I filled my lungs with it in an effort to drive away the feel of the fever. Fifth Avenue was deserted, and so was the little park beyond the arch. In the east, the moon looked down from the rooftops, painting every surface with its soft, translucent white. Strange, what a look of unreality the moon gave to everything. And somehow, I had a sense of being late for an appointment, and I hurried. Something unknown seemed to be urging me on. I had no appointment, and yet, when I saw her sitting alone on the bench, I knew. I knew she'd been waiting for me. Am I late?
You're always working, and you never realize what time it is. You never consider my feelings one jot a tittle.
Harriet. The name came easily to my lips, as though I'd spoken it all my life. Why, Harriet, forgive me. You know it's for you that I'm doing it just as much as for myself.
You and your novel. Why can't you be sensible and take the position my father offered you?
Would you really want me to spend my life behind a counter?
Well, if you cared for me at all, you'd not let your silly pride stand in the way. Selling dry goods may not be as romantic as writing a novel, but it would give you a start. And then father couldn't object to our betrothal.
I know, and I've thought about it. Perhaps someday, if there's no other way. But first, I must finish the book. I'll stand or fall on success. That's fair enough, isn't it, Harry?
Tom Gordon has asked me to marry him.
Oh. Have you accepted?
Oh, Martin, you know I didn't. My heart is yours. It always will be.
Harriet, my sweet.
If only you'd be sensible.
Oh, be patient, dear. It's just a few more weeks.
Come. Father's waiting for you in the library.
I opened the door and went in. Good evening, Mr. Beauchamp.
Sit down, sir. Sit down.
I sank into the chair opposite him. He put down his paper and looked up at me for the first time.
That man in the White House, he's taking us straight to perdition, the most incompetent bungler this country has ever had to put up with.
General Grant does the best he can, sir.
The best he can. The best he can. But it isn't to discuss General Grant that I asked my daughter to bring you here.
No, sir.
I'll speak frankly, sir. I'm a candid man. I pride myself on my candor. And I've come to a decision. Either give up your scribbling, sir, or give up my daughter.
Even though I expected, the bluntness of his words left me speechless. Then the door opened and Harriet came in. I looked to her for help. Harriet, to you, is this the way you feel, too?
I tried to tell you, Martin. You must make your choice.
You know I can't give you up. You mean too much to me.
You must make your choice, Martin.
Well, sir?
Well, I must think. Give me time to think. A week or a few days. Please, I'm not well. My fever's coming on again. If you'll excuse me, I'll go home. Somehow, I must have crawled through the streets and found my own bed. And then the fever struck. The next I knew, it was broad daylight. Someone was stirring in the kitchen. Harriet.
Hello, Martin. Welcome home.
Welcome home?
Don't you know you've been out like a light most of the day? Probably since you got in last night. Golly, it's good to see a bit of animation for a change.
Lauren.
Well, of course, Lauren. Lucky for you, I dropped in this morning. If I hadn't, well, I can't bear to think what might have happened.
Well, Lauren, was I really that sick?
Almost to the top of the thermometer.
And you've been taking care of me all day?
Well, it wasn't Harriet, whoever she might be.
Oh, did I say Harriet?
You did. And it wasn't the first time.
Funny. But, what about your job at the agency?
Oh, I phoned and told them I was taking the day off. They were very decent about it.
Gosh, I don't know how to thank you.
Don't, then. Who is Harriet?
I don't know. I can't seem to remember. Oh, probably some figment of a fever-ridden mind. No serious rival for you, at any rate.
It's nice to be reassured. Have I any?
Rivals? Mm. Oh, good Lord, no. No, Lauren, I guess you're the only woman who has ever meant anything to me.
Really?
Give me your hand. Lauren, would you consider marrying a very impecunious author with nothing in the world to offer but three quarters of a novel and his undying affection?
Martin, are you sure you want me?
I know this much. I can't ever imagine wanting anyone else.
Martin, I'll go fix some tea and toast.
She left the room. I meant what I said to her. There never had been anyone else. But then, who was Harriet? I knew nobody of that name, and yet it was so familiar. So very familiar. And then, slowly, it came back to me. Lauren!
Yes? Just a minute. I can't let the toast burn. Do you think you could eat an egg, too?
Oh, Lauren, listen. I know now who Harriet is.
You do?
I met her last night in Washington Square. It was the first time, and yet we seemed to know each other so very well.
How strange.
Yeah, but that wasn't the strangest part of it. She wore a long, wide skirt like a crinoline and an old-fashioned shawl over her shoulders.
Probably a refugee from a Gilbert and Sullivan show in the neighborhood.
No. Those were her everyday clothes. They were perfectly in keeping with everything about her. The square was different, too, as I remember. I didn't see a single car nor an electric light anywhere. And there were cobbles in the streets.
Martin, what a whopper of a dream. Get it down on paper before you lose it again. You know, you had me worried for a minute there. I mean, about Harriet.
I didn't have the heart to tell her it was no dream, but reality. As solid and substantial as the plate of toast she brought me a few minutes later. Now, could I tell her how dangerous a rival she had in Harriet? Harriet, a contemporary of my great-grandmother. By the end of the week, I was strong enough to go out for walks in the park. Automobiles swept by over the smooth asphalt. Traffic lights blinked red and green. Women moved briskly in their slim, functional clothes. I was beginning to think I really had dreamed it all. Until the following Sunday. Lauren and I were to have dinner together. The 3 o'clock was still several hours away, so I wandered down to the square and sat in the warm sunlight, thinking of my work. There was a point I had to check on before I could go on with the next chapter. And this might be as good a time as any to take a trip uptown to the library. I got up and walked to the corner. Bus stop sign was missing from its accustomed place. Still, it had to be right, for there were others waiting. And then I noticed. It had happened again. Time had turned back.
We'll return in just a moment with Act Two of the Movie Town Radio Theater's presentation of the next chapter, starring Mr. George Brent. And now, here is our announcer.
I looked about me. The square might have been a career, and I was Print, somehow come to life. Then I saw her. She was hurrying toward me, flushed and out of breath. Her face began to burn, and a trembling ran through me. And then I knew. This beautiful girl was the magnet drawing me back 70-odd years into an alien century.
Oh, Martin, I'm sorry I couldn't get away sooner. But how pale you look, dear. Have you been ill?
Oh, the old fever's had a crack at me again, but I'm over it.
That explains why I haven't heard from you.
Shall we walk?
No, let's go back to our bench. I've been walking all morning with Tom. He was telling me about his plans. He's going to Chicago. His firm is opening a branch office there, and he's to be in charge.
And I suppose he wants you to come with him as his wife.
Yes, he does, Martin.
What did you tell him?
I told him he'd have my answer tonight.
You don't love Tom. You can't marry him. You know that.
I could be very comfortable as his wife.
Comfort? Is that what you want out of life?
It's a matter of compromise. I'm ready to give up Tom and all his fine prospects for you, dear. But then you must compromise, too.
All right, I'll compromise. I'll never put another word on paper. I'll do anything you want. But I must have you, Harriet. That evening, the house teemed with chattering friends and relatives, come to help us celebrate our engagement. My head was throbbing with the heat and the excitement. I had to get away.
Well, now, where are you off to, my boy?
Oh, Mr. Beauchamp, sir. Well, I... The heat. I've got a bit of a headache, and I thought a walk in the park...
Good idea. I'll come along with you. Do us both good. I'm glad of this opportunity to talk to you, Martin. Now that things are settled between you and Harriet, we ought to be thinking about the future.
Yes, sir.
I see no reason why you shouldn't begin at the store tomorrow. The sooner the better, I always say.
Well, I suppose it would be just as well.
And I want you to come and live with us. You will eventually, anyway, after you and Harriet are married... And so why not move in now?
Now?
That's right. You've got a lot to learn about the business. Surely it won't hurt to spend a little time evenings talking shop with the old man, eh?
Oh, is this what Harriet wants?
It was her idea.
Huh? And that settles it. I'll come.
Good. You live close by. Why not go and pick up whatever things you want for the time being?
You mean right now, tonight?
Yes. I won't tell Harriet where you've gone. We'll surprise her.
He left me. I stood watching his thick-set form fading into the dark. I turned and walked slowly out of the park. Across Fifth Avenue, a hansom cab rattled past. I had to jump to avoid being trampled. I turned the corner into 8th Street. Gone. The cobbles and the horse-drawn carriage is gone. The ladies in their bonnets and their crinolines. I turned the corner into another century. My century. And then I remembered. Lauren. Oh, Lauren.
9 o'clock. This is a fine time to keep a 3 o'clock Sunday dinner, dear.
Oh, I'm sorry, Lauren. I just came back to get some of my clothes together.
Well, are you going away?
Yes. Well, that is, I'm moving, and you'll have to know about it sooner or later, so it might just as well be now. Lauren, I've just become engaged to Harriet, and I'm going to live with her in her father's house.
Martin. Oh, Martin, darling, you're ill. Come, dear, lie down, and I'll get a doctor on the phone.
Oh, no, I'm not ill. I'm perfectly well, and I have to hurry. Now, let go of me, I tell you. Let go.
Martin, come back.
The next morning, I was installed behind a counter in Mr. Beauchamp's store. In the weeks that followed, I tried to make myself over into the ideal salesman of yard goods and ladies' notions. Our wedding was scheduled for October 15th. It was a date that I looked forward to with eagerness and despair. I loved Harriet, and yet I hated her. For I was a prisoner in a time that was not my own. And Harriet was my jailer.
Marvin, we have some news for you. Father's going to Chicago on the first of next month, and I'm going with him.
You? You're going to Chicago?
Yes, isn't it wonderful?
But the wedding, we're supposed to be married on the 15th.
Oh, I'll be back in plenty of time for that. And by the way, dear, we're going up to Tiffany's on Monday to choose the silver Father's giving us. I thought we might as well buy the wedding ring while we're there. Isn't it all terribly exciting?
On the first of the month, we go to the railroad station. I saw my future wife and father-in-law off to Chicago. I was free for 10 days, and I was enjoying my freedom. Before I knew it, I was on 14th Street, bustling, noisy, crowded with shoppers, and suddenly, in the distance, I caught a glimpse of a familiar figure. It was Lauren. Lauren! Lauren, wait for me! She didn't hear me, and I hurried after her, but the crowd was thick, and people got in my way, and I tried to run, colliding with people who crossed my path. Excuse me. Get out of my way, please. Let me through. Lauren! Lauren, wait! She crossed the street. Traffic was heavy. I paid no heed and ran after her, dodging the speeding vehicles. And then when I reached the other side, she was gone. Gone. Swallowed up in the crowd. I began to wonder if I'd seen her at all. Or was it just an hallucination? Or was Harriet and her father and the job at the store and those horse-drawn carriages, were they hallucinations? I didn't know. I wasn't sure of anything. Not even of my own sanity. Somehow, I found my way to the substantial Beauchamp's home. I flung myself into bed and gave myself up to an attack of malaria. For 3 days, I tossed and trembled, and the fourth day, I arose and went downstairs. It was a mild day, and the windows were open. Newsboys outside were crying an extra. Chicago burns. Fire department helpless. Thousands homeless. Millions of dollars in damages. Hundreds dead. Harriet. I rushed to the telegraph office. I want to send a telegram.
Sure. Where to?
Chicago.
Oh, I was afraid of that. Sorry, no messages to Chicago.
Oh, but this is important. My fiancé is there. I must know if she's safe.
Wires are down in Chicago, and the nearest office is being used exclusively for messages out. It'll be several days before you can send a telegram there. Sorry.
Well, what can I do? How can I know if she's safe?
You might go to the newspaper offices on Park Row. They're getting all the news there is. Lists of casualties, when they can be identified.
The newspaper offices were crowded with anxious friends and relatives, but there was no information, save what could be read in the paper of themselves. So I went back home to wait. 6 days later, on the 15th, day of our wedding, I heard a carriage drive up to the door. I sat in my chair trembling, listening to the slow, heavy steps in the hall. I lifted my head and saw Mr. Beauchamp.
Harriet is gone, Martin. She was alone in her hotel room when it burned.
But is there no chance that she could have escaped? She wouldn't just have stayed there and let the flames devour her. I can't believe it. She can't be dead.
I went back later. It was she. It was Harriet.
And then a vast black pit opened and swallowed me. When I awoke, I was alone in my room. The house lay quiet as a grave, and over it hung the stale smell of dust and disuse. I hurried to the door and flung it open, and I began to run. It was very late. The empty streets echoed and re-echoed my footsteps. I didn't know where I was running, to whom. I only knew I had to get away. At last, a familiar street. A house that I knew well. I ran up the steps and threw myself against the door, my fists beating feebly on its wooden panels. I lay in bed. Daylight filtered through the slats of a Venetian blind. Felt the presence of someone near me, and I turned my head. There, standing in the door, was Lauren. Her face was serious and unsmiling.
Better not talk, Martin. You're still too weak.
Lauren, my darling, I'm back again. I'm free.
Quiet, Martin. You're still a very sick boy. Now you'll have some of this soup and then to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
this morning.
Strong enough to get up?
You'll have to wait until tomorrow for that. But the doctor says you may sit in a chair for a little while.
Lauren, what day is this? What month?
Tuesday, October 20th.
June to October. Almost 6 months.
That's right. Almost 6 months.
Aren't you going to ask me where I've been?
Some other time, dear. Right now, I have things to do. For one thing, I'm going to take your suit out to the cleaners. The one you were wearing when I found you the other morning draped over my milk bottle.
Oh, so that was my triumphant homecoming, was it?
Oh, you were a fine sight, I can tell you.
Her voice was the sweetest music in the world. How close I'd come to losing her. But I was home at last. I was home and I was free.
Martin?
Yes, Lauren? Her face was pale and a little frightened when she came into the room.
Martin, look what I found in your coat pocket.
What is it?
Here.
She put a small velvet box into my hand. The lid said Tiffany's in gilt letters. I opened it.
A wedding ring.
Oh. Oh, yes, I know.
For anybody I know?
I snapped the lid shut. Open the window, Laura.
What are you going to do?
Open the window, please. I threw the box and ring out the window as far as I could.
Martin, are you still feverish?
No, Lauren. Just pulling down the curtain on a closed episode. As soon as I'm well enough, we'll pick out a ring for you. Your wedding ring.
And the curtain falls on Act Two of the Movie Town Radio Theater's presentation of the next chapter, starring Mr. George Brent, who returns in just a moment. And here's our star, Mr. George Brent. George, I enjoyed your performance very much, and I'm certain our audience did, too.
Thanks, Les. It was a good story, and I'm happy if I didn't let you or the writer of the story down. And now, can I go back to Hidden Valley and relax in this century?
Hidden Valley. I hear you have quite a place out there, George. You raise horses or something, don't you?
Yeah, horses and something. I specialize in thoroughbred racing horses and prize cattle.
That sounds like a very expensive hobby.
Not at all. I'm happy to say it's a very profitable business. And as you said at the beginning of the show, I've been a leading man since the beginning of talking pictures. And, well, I won't be a leading man all my life, so there will always be horses and cattle.
And dogs. I hear you keep quite a houseful of them.
Just a few.
Sounds to me like you like animals better than people.
Oh, I wouldn't say that, but sometimes they seem more reliable.
I know what you mean.
But then there are reliable people, too, Les, and I'd like to thank very much the reliable actors who worked with me on this show, particularly Janet Logan, who played Lauren.
Thank you very much, George Brent. In the cast, you heard our star, Mr. George Brent, as Martin, Janet Logan as Lauren, Barbara Fuller as Harriet, William Green as the father, and Don Shelton as the telegraph operator. The next chapter was written by George and Gertrude Farr, edited by Bud Lesser, music composed, conducted by Del Castillo, and the production directed by yours truly, Les Mitchell. And now, thank you very much for attending this week's performance. We hope you'll make our theater a regular habit. Each week, we'll be on hand to take your tickets. I'll be here to ring up the curtain on specially selected radio plays, and our coming attractions will include some great stars and some fine stories which we sincerely believe you will enjoy. Join us, won't you?